So my story is called Lucky and Unlucky. All morning, you've been lucky and unlucky. Yes, this is me. It's Lenny, your boyfriend. Lucky and unlucky. I've repeated these syllables so often that they've become the clack and click of a train's wheels moving fast in a dark tunnel. I can trace your morning with perfect transparency, perfect clarity of vision, until the point where you met me, and then I can tell it. On a mundane morning, plucked out of a string of mundane mornings, your alarm chirps at 7 o'clock. You're sleeping on your side in the bed in your flat, heavily embroiled in a dream which sucks and nags at you and makes no sense. An old primary school teacher is there, and a cat you have to take to a supermarket. You're in a canoe. The surreal aspects belie the fear and anxiety this is causing you. The alarm goes off and enters your dream. It takes you some seconds to struggle awake before you hit the off button and immediately lie down again. This is one of your favourite habits and has made you late for work countless times before. When I stay over, this is my cue to chivvy you awake and out of bed, making a game of your sleepiness and my bullying. But I'm not there this morning, as the night before I had to go to a work event and I went back to my own flat rather than crash in late and drunk. Let's look at you for a moment. Your dark hair is spread out in a loose wedge across the pillow. You look good. Your face has relaxed from the anxiety of the dream, and a crease from where you've slept too long and a wrinkle of the pillow only highlights how good your skin is and how young you are. You're only 26, 7 years younger than me. There's a thin slice of eye under your eyelids, which aren't quite closed, but not enough to reveal your dark irises, black like Kalamata olives, or those drops of pure wet tar we saw outside your flat a month ago when the council resurfaced the street. You've dragged yourself out of bed now. Unlucky. Outside on the walkway, you've just missed the postman's knock. He's wearing shorts because it's a lovely morning already, and because he's an optimist, you can tell from the way he whistles. He had 2 CDs and a couple of hardbacks from Amazon to offer you, but now he's put the cleverly constructed cardboard package back inside his bag as you pad naked into the bathroom. You piss, wipe yourself and throw the paper behind you. It misses the toilet and falls on the floor, a blossom of white paper, moulded by your cunt and barely stained with urine. You skip a shower, but roll deodorant onto your armpits, gritting your teeth into a jagged animal expression as the deodorant catches one of the nicks from shaving your armpits last night. As you're rolling on deodorant, a mile and a half away, down Mile End Lane, across the park, along St. Philip's, past Mississippi Fried Chicken, the newsagent and the Church of the True Believers in God on Earth, 2 more small back streets, and then left. I have already got gingerly out of bed and kicked over a full glass of water I had considerately left there for myself last night. It soaked the library book, sprawled face down, with the spine cracked, on the floor next to it. Unlucky. I wanted to take that with me to read on the journey into work, but all I could do now is balance it on top of the radiator to dry. I don't have to be at work until 10, but I'd woken at 6, my bladder swollen and rock solid, engorged with a froth of processed beer from last night. After I'd opened my eyes and admitted consciousness on a trip to the toilet, I couldn't get back to sleep. Early morning light pushed through the thin protection of my blinds and outlined my clothes, the litter of books by the side of the bed and a wedge of door. My brain felt too big for my skull, and I felt slightly sick, so I'd lain there quietly and let the minutes tick past me, using up the best part of the day, as my father would have said. When it got to 7, I couldn't bear the waiting. I decided to leap out of bed and let the hangover attack me with its full might. I'm on the loo, not bothering to shave, when it occurs to me that I could meet you if I hurry. Sometimes our journeys into work converge, and I've managed to catch you at the station a few times when you didn't know I was coming. Twice, you look thrilled and peck kisses across my face in the middle of the station with the other commuters pushing past us. I grab a power bar and pour the cup of instant coffee I'd made myself down the sink. I snatch my suit jacket and leave the house. Back in the bedroom, you've shrugged on a shirt and slipped into black trousers and your favourite pair of boots. You decide as you're dressing that you'll have to get breakfast on your way into work. From a place run by two Italians on the corner, you can get a pastry and a latte. I know you like doing this because it makes you feel cosmopolitan. Not the girl from Colchester anymore. You're moving now with calm speed. Check your bag, diary, little bottle of water, shit, fill it up at the bathroom tap, tampons, foundation, little green purse, mascara, phone. You click the fiddly clasp shut and you're out of the house, trying not to bang the door behind you. You know that other people are still asleep and briefly wish you could be. You're nearly at the end of your street when you panic and think that you've forgotten your keys. This conjures up anger and frustration because you did this for the first time ever about 2 weeks ago and I had to leave work early and come across town. And because I'd had a row with some cunt in accounts that day, I was sarcastic and patronising when I arrived, your saviour. You fiddle with the clasp of the bag, stop in the street and check the front compartments. The flash of metal reassures you that they're there. Lucky. You look up, satisfied that your keys are safe, to see the red of the bus to the station flash past at the end of the street. There is no way you can sprint to the bus stop in time. Unlucky. You do the quick calculations of someone who travels the same route every morning, and it confirms that you're going to be late. You stand at the bus stop and wait. You want to buy a paper, but don't want to risk missing another bus. The bus, as you think this, is one stop away, but an old black woman with a shopping trolley is descending slowly. You'll have enough time if you go now. You decide to go now and dart into the newsagents just behind you. You grab a paper, hand over the right change, and you're out of there, just as the bus comes lumbering up the road to your stop. I'm walking along the cool streets, not yet beaten out with the day's sun. A few trees, blocked in by paving stones, rustle, and the new growth shows up pale green. I'm swinging past the rows of yellowy-brown brick houses. There's a man on the opposite side of the street, about 150 metres ahead of me. He's looking for house numbers. He crosses over the street. Now I'm wrestling to remove my jacket, because the walk is making me sweat, and gnawing a corner of power bar, gripping it only with my teeth. I'm not thinking about either of these activities. I'm thinking about the top of my head. It looks okay in the mirror this morning, but then it's hard to tell if you're losing your hair, and even harder to see the top of your head properly in a mirror. I resolve to test the top of my head gently with my fingertips as soon as I've got a hand free. Now you're on the bus. There aren't any seats, but you don't care because it's only a short ride. You're clutching your bag with a newspaper under the same armpit you stung with deodorant earlier, and with the other arm, you're clinging to the plastic light bulb dangling from the roof. You're not tall, so this is an effort for you, and rather than providing extra stability, it makes you stand on tiptoe, dangling almost suspended between the floor and the ceiling. I can see the blue and red sign for the underground across the street as I wait for the traffic lights to change. I just missed the green man. Across the road, I see a bus pulling up, but its rectangular frame blocks the stream of passengers from my view. I feel certain that you're on it as I fret for the flow of traffic to stop, for the lights to flick from one colour to another. A few people push past me and dart through the lanes of traffic, playing the gaps and nudges like a builder on a fruit machine, but I don't have the bottle today with my hangover, so I wait on the curb. You wait for people to filter off the bus before stepping down onto the curb. You take 12 steps along the street and you disappear into the maw of the underground station. When the lights change, I push off the pavement, jostling along with the other commuters who had built up around me while I waited. Inside the tube station, I swivel my head dramatically, searching for you. Unlucky. You're not by the downtrodden self-service machines, or at any of the ticket windows, or at a cash machine. I can't see you talking earnestly to a guard, or scanning the whiteboard for the current state of service. You don't appear to be at any of the barriers. You're already on your way to work, sucked into the tubes, or late, somewhere behind me. I buy a ticket and head towards the barriers, all my haste and importance slowly deflating. People stream past me in the opposite direction. Now they're out in the air, surrounded by trees and light and sky, while I'm waiting on the platform. The tug of stale air signals that a train is coming. I've just made it down the escalator and turned right onto the platform in time. Lucky. You're 10 metres away from me now. You've been waiting on the platform for longer than me, so you're leaning against the crimson tile by the chocolate machine, your bag and newspaper drooping. You look up for the train, and instead you see me, partially hidden by a thicket of people. My suit and the fuzz of my blonde hair, it wasn't thinning as much as I'd worried, are enough to make you certain. People push forward and gamble on where the doors are going to stop. Lenny, it's you, and you distract me and I hold back. My face lights with pleasure. Catherine, come on. The carriage is heaving, and when we try to shove on, the people hardly yield. Shall we wait? I ask. I'm late already. I push on, bending my height, and you fit into a gap between two people. The doors squeeze shut. There is someone's armpit in your face, and a sharp object digging into my back. A rucksack, a shoulder bag. The train starts with a jerk, and you would have fallen over were you not wedged between people. We grimace at each other, and I blow you a kiss. A flash. That's all it is. Like someone taking a photo indoors, unexpectedly, at a party. But the irony is that it doesn't even hurt my eyes. I don't even have time to close my eyes against the light. It's funny. If I'd ever thought about this happening, I would have pictured it in slow motion, giving me infinities and agonies of arched regret as my body tried to react away from the danger, or heroically into it, shielding others. You can choose which version you prefer. For me, it no longer matters. The world should slow down to allow me to cling to the last moments I'll ever have here. Precious for all their banality, because that's all I'll ever have, again and again and again and forever. So, today you've been lucky and unlucky. 1,000 tiny infinite moments which add up to more than human beings can comprehend. A lattice of chance and causality laid bare to be sifted in the weeks that follow. Lucky and unlucky. Lucky and unlucky. These words are like a pulse in me that flickers on and off to the soft beep of your life support machine. You've lost your right leg and a lot of your face. Your dark, soft skin that I so love to touch was torn off. Your spleen and right kidney don't work anymore. You won't be out of intensive care for nearly a year. You won't remember meeting me on the platform or even waking up that morning, so I've recorded it all carefully for you as best I could. You won't remember that kiss I blew you.